Welcome to Curaleaf, a medical marijuana dispensary. Whether you're a longtime patient or you're just getting acquainted with this incredible plant, Curaleaf of Pennsylvania is honored to guide you along your medical marijuana journey.
This is the Blue White Breakdown, the premier podcast for all things Penn State football.
Talk about culture. It's something that should show up in every aspect of your program.
It's the Blue White Breakdown, brought to you by Penn Live. Here are your hosts, Bob Flounders and David Jones.
Hey, everyone. It's the bye week for Penn State football, but the Blue White Breakdown podcast just won't quit, even with the Lions off this week. Bob Flounders here with Dave Jones. We're going to talk, obviously, Dave, we're going to talk a little bit about the Iowa game, because I just think that Penn State fans are still probably a little annoyed about that result. But we also want to big picture it. And, you know, we're at the bye. They have a challenging six-game schedule left that who knows how it could play out. We'll talk a little bit about Sean Clifford. But let's just start, Dave, with how you're doing. And kind of, I know you have some thoughts about what transpired in Iowa.
I think I need to explain. I meant to explain this before the game, but I never did, that I was not in Iowa City for this game, which is only like the third game I've ever missed, not including COVID, which was a whole different situation. But this was COVID related. My wife works at Penn Hospitals in Philadelphia. She hadn't gotten her booster yet, and she had her first shot in January. So she was like at the 8-month threshold. And when I was asked back in June how I felt about certain trips, I said, well, if there's one that maybe I shouldn't do, it's Iowa, because I'm not sure if she's going to have her booster yet. And it turned out she got her booster. So I could have gone, but I didn't know that in June. So that's why I wasn't there. First thing I want to ask you, and I haven't asked you yet, is what did you think of the crowd? From TV, it reminded me of West Virginia in the old days, yeah. You know, in Mountaineer Field, just kind of nasty and not what you expect of an Iowa crowd. Usually, I've been to Iowa a lot of time, right. And it's more like Nebraska. You know, it's nice, friendly, right. Country people who are right. Good hosts. And this did not sound like that at all. Did it sound like that in the press box?
It didn't. And I think I can explain part of the reason why they were extraordinary.
Well, you know, it's not a fast-paced offense, man.
No, but Dave, let me just say this. So this is why I'm laughing. I was talking to some people out in Iowa, and I think I have this right. Alcohol sales.
Is it alcohol? Yeah.
Alcohol sales. Two at a time. Greg Pickle, who used to work at Penn Live, was in the press box next to me, and he was talking because he went out to the stadium, and he was doing some video work for Blue White Illustrated. I think he wanted to get some tape of the Children's Hospital and the Wave. So he was moving around the stadium. He said at one point he noticed at the beer stand, people were you're allowed to get them two at a time. And the line was so long, people would buy two and they would get back in line to get two. And it was just like a gigantic circle.
All right. Well,
They were fired up maybe a little bit more than normal Iowa fans. But I don't know if the Penn State fans were aware of that, but they were taking advantage of the new alcohol policy at Kinnick State.
All right. Well, then that makes me feel better about Iowans, because you and I both know that could, if they had alcohol sales at Penn State, yes. The same damn thing would happen.
It was funny.
That does explain a lot. I did hear that yesterday from somebody who was there.
They were getting after it.
It sounded like, I mean, there was a bar. This was way before your time. And I was riding back with our old sports editor, Nick Horvath, and Ronnie Crist. And it's like 1991. I think it was my first year seriously on the beat. And there was this place it was like 1115, almost home. But if anyone knows our old sports editor, Nick Horvath, he could have appetite at any point. I wanted to kill him, but I'm in no position.
You're in
a year and a half, and I want to kill him for stopping. But he tells Ronnie to stop at this place. And it's almost to the 322 entrance, but not quite on 1115. And the bars were just getting out at this place. And we walked in and it was like the bar from Star Wars. And we sat down and that was the noise. I was like, that was the noise I was hearing from that Iowa crowd. And I was like, Nick, I looked across at him and I said, we got to get out of here. He goes, okay. Yeah. And we got up and left.
It was an electric atmosphere. And I would say this, watching how the game played out, if I was going to award game balls to the Iowa side, the punter for Iowa would get my first game ball. The crowd, the entire crowd, would get my second game ball. And that Iowa secondary would get my third game ball. They intercepted four passes. Anytime there was a jump ball in the air, man, those guys tracked that ball.
Wait a minute. You've got it all wrong.
I mean, don't have it all wrong.
The first game ball goes to one man and one man only, the man who knocked Sean Clifford out of the game, Jack Campbell.
Yeah.
Because if that doesn't happen, none of the rest happens. And you got to admit I'm right.
But Dave, I said the way the game played out. So what I'm saying is when it's 17-3, the only way they were going to get back in that game, even with Taquan Roberson in it, was the guys that I listed. Now, yeah, you're right about Campbell. Watching that hit over and over, Sean struggled to get up. He's taken some shots all year, but I did not feel as he got up and on his feet. I just never got the sense that was going to be the hit. Now I'm not a doctor. That was going to be the hit that ended his day. It was just, I'm just struggling to figure out what that issue was. I'm sure it was significant for him not to return to the game, but I did not feel like watching the hit, watching him get up, that was going to be the end of his day.
Well, when you throw a ball and you get your ribs exposed like that, even when I was a young man getting hit like that playing basketball, or I don't think I ever got that playing football, but when you have your arm exposed and you're hit under here, he got hit like that twice. That wasn't the first time he got hit. I believe it was Van Valkenburg. I think it was Van Valkenburg on his heave into the end zone. If you watch that, he hit him right in the same place. So maybe it was an accumulation of blows. I don't know. But it hurts later, and it hurts in an accumulation, kind of like boxing. You get hit a couple times there, man. It starts to hurt like hell.
Dave, that's certainly possible. But the reason why I'm still flummoxed about this is who knows what happened when he went into the tent, went into the locker room, came out with his pads on. Dave, no ice on anywhere. Nothing is taped. He is not looking uncomfortable in any way, shape, or form in terms of maybe absorbing. Because if you hurt your ribs, I have not had a rib injury. I've heard, man, it is so painful that you just can't do enough to numb that pain. So he never looked like he was in discomfort.
Well, he probably was shot up, don't you think?
Yeah.
It did look like he was wrapped underneath his T-shirt to me.
It did?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I just didn't. Usually you see some ice go with that or something. And he didn't, you could be right. But I just feel like if that was the case, there would have been more clues. Maybe you're seeing it the right way. And maybe we'll know soon enough. But
well, this is part of the problem of James Franklin's super secrecy on injuries, because then you get
speculation.
Then you get dopes like us who have to try to decipher and read the tea leaves. It's not like he has to say, oh, he's going to be back, he's not going to be back for certain games.
Yeah.
And it's pretty clear where he got hit. There's nothing he's going to disclose that anybody's not going to know. I just don't see the point in it, but that's what he does. So that's what he does.
Yeah. Anything? What else struck you about that Iowa game? I know you have some thoughts, and I know you
that Penn State absolutely wins that game if Clifford is not knocked out. I mean, I picked Iowa specifically because I thought Clifford might do the thing that he did on the very first possession, which was force a throw that he didn't need to throw, because he's just a little more flamboyant than Spencer Petras. Spencer Petras, whatever you want to say about him, and you're not a fan, I know, but sometimes when you have a kid who is more amenable to being a game manager, it's a good thing in a game like that. I thought he was much more amenable to that role than maybe Sean Clifford was. But to Sean Clifford's credit, he shook that off. He got some help from his defense who saved him.
Oh, yeah, they did. Yeah, he did.
Right there. And he got right back on his feet and played a great next 20 minutes or whatever it was. Mike Yurcich had that defense figured out. They were making him play in big space, and they didn't have any answers with their first four. You know, people are on Penn State's offensive line. Hey, at that point in the game, they were blocking that basic four very easily. Mm-hmm. There was no answer for Phil Parker other than to run an extra blitzer at him, which is what they did, and which ultimately got Clifford out of the game. If they don't get Clifford out of the game, I think that's a 2 or 3 touchdown game possibly.
Yeah. Yes. And Dave, I heard a little feedback not deserved about, you know, Sean could have came back. Like, fans, listen, man, Sean Clifford is a tough guy. He is a tough guy. Since he started at Penn State, you go back to that 2019 season when they ran him like 160 times. Yeah, he had to leave the Ohio State game. He didn't play against Rutgers. He was never the same from an injury. But the amount of punishment that kid can take and keep getting up, the fact that he couldn't play tells me that it was absolutely a significant injury, and there was no chance. He might have just been ruled out by the doctors. But what I'm getting at, Dave, is I just wish he doesn't always have to be that tough. You look at all the unnecessary hits he's taken over his career, holding onto the ball, waiting for the last second for a play to come open. I would say even on that play that when Campbell hit him, you know, Campbell had a nice running start to get at Clifford. He was pretty far back in the pocket. And Sean clearly, I think, saw him coming. He held onto the ball to the last possible second, I thought. And to your point, where there were situations where Petras, the minute he felt pressure, especially early in the game, he threw it into the stands, lived to play another day. I just think that sometimes Sean's greatest strength in terms of toughness, holding onto the ball, try and make a play, you know, over the time that he's been the quarterback, I think it's been like a war of attrition, and I think it got him this time.
Yeah, and if you have to try to speculate, which we do, we don't know.
Right.
I would guess maybe they suspected a cracked rib, or they didn't know, but they thought maybe they shot him up and waited until they get an MRI, because you can't do it. I don't think you can do it with an MRI in the stadium. You don't know what's in there. So discretion being the better part of valor, they held him out. That's the problem, is that he's kind of a swashbuckler. You know, he's the gunslinger, wants to be Brett Favre. Well, there's a price to be paid for being Brett Favre. And it wasn't just Sean Clifford who had to pay it. It was Penn State. That's what I was talking about before the game. And that hit, you're talking about a 6'5", 250-pound guy. That kid's going to be Jack Lambert in the NFL, isn't he? And he's like a redshirt sophomore.
He's a good player. I think he absolutely is an NFL player. And he's got a wingspan of like a 7'5" guy. Like, he made some plays in last year's game. He is a guy that can play the run or the pass because of his he's an athletic big man who can move. You know, he's not quite as tall, but I was in the press box. I was like, you know, It's a little like Ted Hendricks, the mad stork, who was like 6'8", and he was a stand-up outside linebacker, but that's the body type you're talking about.
And when something that big hits you with that kind of force that fast, you know, it might not look like much on TV. That hurts, and that has an accumulating effect.
Correct.
If you did get anything in there, it's going to feel worse and worse as the game goes on.
Yeah.
Maybe he thought he could go back to the locker room and then strap it on and get back at it. They stopped him, or he couldn't breathe. Who knows what happened in there?
Right. It's not just the initial hit that he lands on you. You know what I mean? It's like you hit the ground. There's the force of it. You hit the ground, and then he falls on top of you.
Right. Right.
So it's actually almost two different hits.
It always is two different hits. And you also have the threat of a concussion, which I'm not sure he did on that hit. But when you hit the ground, then your head does that. And that's how you get, you don't have to be hit in the head to get concussive symptoms. So Anyway, all anyone is wondering is when he's going to be back, because Taquan Roberson clearly was not ready for that moment. We feared it. I've been saying all year, Clifford cannot get hurt because they don't have Will Levis back there anymore. And what I wrote after the game is this game is really all about the transfer portal and where we are with the way kids can transfer. And I applaud it. I like the rule. I like their mobility. I like that they have the ability to go and play where they can play. But nobody transfers to be a backup anymore. Mm-hmm. And I used the case of Anthony Russo from Temple, right, who I think thought he could start at Michigan State. He thought he could start in front of Peyton Thorne, and that's why he transferred to Michigan State. But Thorne beat him out. I think that's been vindicated. And yet they have a good, viable, experienced backup quarterback now at Michigan State. There are other situations, for instance, Michigan. Cade McNamara is the starter, but Sharkface is bringing in J.J. McCarthy.
That's Jim Harbaugh, right? Yep.
He's bringing in J.J. McCarthy. And rightly so. And Josh Gattis, they're bringing him in and getting him run the best they can because he's really talented and they might need him down the road. There are several cases where people either got really good freshmen or they got people out of the transfer portal and Penn State did neither. And now they're really paying for it because to me, Taquan Roberson, God bless him. He was put in a really tough situation,
right,
but he's more of a number three quarterback, man. He just is, because he cannot throw the ball accurately at this point. There's also the problem you have with it's been decades since number twos or number threes got any reps with the first team, with the ones. It just doesn't happen. It's not deemed efficient time maintenance in practice. When they used to be able to practice forever. They can't do that anymore. They haven't been able to do that for a long time. So you practice your ones with the ones, and that's that. So he hasn't even practiced with these guys. He's expected to meld in. It's a situation where the sound is deafening. He's got to run a read option offense with a shotgun. It's not like he can go under center. I mean, if he was Thomas Lott or something in the old days, maybe they could run triple option and he could go under center. But he has been trained in the shotgun, and that's what he knows. You couldn't put him under center. There was really no answer to that situation in the din of Kinnick, was there? I mean, I don't know. I don't know what they do.
And as bad as it went for Penn State's offense, 3 points with him running the show, a lot of empty possessions. Had Penn State's tight ends held on to some passes, it could have changed some things in terms of field position at the very least. The crowd noise was, you are right, the crowd noise was deafening. And that punter had Penn State backed up. So, and you, when you're backed up in the end zone, it's almost magnified by a factor of 3 or 4. They could not get to the middle of the field where you're kind of away a little bit from the crowd noise, and it might be a little bit easier to communicate with your offensive line and your receivers if you want to do some things, if you want to, because you could just tell when they were backed up, everyone wants to yell at the offensive line for those 3 consecutive false starts. I just don't think they could hear anything. I don't think they could hear Roberson. I don't think Miranda could hear Roberson. Listening to Taquan talk after the game, I applaud him for coming out and answered some questions. He didn't elaborate on a lot of things, but he stood there, asked everything, handled himself very well. But he is a soft-spoken guy, Dave. He is not a guy that his voice carries. And I'm just wondering on the field if it's the same way, because I don't think Penn State's offensive lineman could hear him. You saw him try and clap his hands. Well, that wasn't working either because it was so loud when they were backed up. And when you see 3 consecutive false starts, I'm not sure you want to, I don't think you want to point the finger at the offensive line. It was a mess all the way around.
Yeah, and I think maybe the one valid criticism is that they didn't go to a silent count, which right, a lot of teams go to in situations where they know they're facing a real din on the road, that they didn't go to that earlier. It didn't look like they went to it until sometime in the fourth quarter, and it was clearly a problem before that. If the people, fans who don't know, a silent count is basically where they start with a tap from the guard onto the center or maybe a head nod.
Yeah.
And everyone in unison, all the people on the, all the offensive starters go 1, to, and then they're ready to move. They didn't do that until
looked like it.
The middle of the fourth quarter, maybe. I might be wrong, but I didn't notice it until then. So yeah. That might be the one valid criticism. But you got a lot of moving parts going on in a short amount of time, and they couldn't quite get anything right. I think what people don't understand is that Taquan Robinson is trained in read option offense. I mean, if they were able to do scissors option plays, run him through the A gap, he was getting yardage on some of those. And I think it was the second possession of the second half. They were pretty effective. What did they move? Like 40 yards, got the field goal. He took the sack, the 11-yard sack at the end. But they still got the field, 44-yard field goal from Stout, I think it was. It looked like, well, you know, how many points they need here? They could maybe 3 or 6 more closes this out. But the problems with hearing the count just scuttled all that. And they couldn't run the offense that Roberson knows how to run. You can't put a read option quarterback under center. It doesn't work. You can put a triple option, service academies type quarterback under center, but the geometry of the offense does not work with read option. You can't be under center. It's not what he's trained in. So you can't do that. It's not an option.
Watching that first series, once the crowd saw what was happening right away, that just emboldened them. They knew that they could make life that miserable for Penn State, and the crowd just got louder and louder and louder. The drinking helped, sure, but I think they saw right away that they were going to have a huge impact on the game. Kudos to them. They did it. Both kickers were tremendous. Both defenses were tremendous. Before we look, Dave, at the second half schedule real quick, I just want to talk briefly, man. The Penn State's defense played its ass off, I've said a couple of times on this Blue White Breakdown podcast, this is the closest thing I have seen to the 2005 defense. And I'm telling you, Dave, with the talent they have on this defense, they are right there. They played a winning game. Jordan Stout was great. It's unfortunate that I was able to scheme up that big pass play at the end of the, with 6 minutes to go. It was a brilliant design. Petras had enough time. He made a great throw, but I was thinking at that time, I don't know that I was going to be able to drive the ball.
Right.
You didn't, defense. I did
you
not
didn't know. And that's the thing about station to station offenses where you see the same thing. You're thinking Petras he can't do anything, but then they come up with a scheme play and you don't expect it because you've seen possession upon possession upon possession of the same thing. And then all of a sudden, Nico Reganey is wide open with a blown coverage. That's what Michigan used to do in the old days. You didn't expect them to do stuff like that under Bo Schembechler. And then they would hit a big play on you because you were getting certain you're going to see the fastball. Then suddenly the power pitcher throws you an off speed pitch in a 2-2 count and you're screwed. You know,
I would hesitate to call that a blown coverage because I think that play design exploited Penn State, because there's this. I think it's the safety. I'm not sure. I want to say it was Jair Brown, but I don't know.
Understood. Yeah. That was a toss back too.
Yeah, it was a play where he's got to make a difficult choice. He's got it. Look, they're doing it the whole game, right? Everything's flowing one way. They set it up perfectly. Having said all that, Curtis Jacobs, who is going to be a star at Penn State now too, you could see that, almost ran that play down from like the line of scrimmage. How fast was he in this game? He clearly is comfortable now at that strong side linebacker position. Iowa never had an answer for him. This defense now has another player, Dave, to mess things up for an offense. I think this Penn State defense played better than the Wisconsin game. It was that tremendous of an effort. It's unfortunate it was not a win for Penn State, but man, those guys played so hard and played so well.
You know what else? You didn't notice that much of a drop off between PJ Mustafer and Devon Ellis, who was in there most of the time. And they had a couple other guys.
Also hurt.
Right. And Mustafer looked like he ain't coming back to me. I don't know. You get big guys like that with knees and it's not good. We haven't heard definitively, I don't believe, have we? No,
we have not. But everything
that ain't good. But Devon Ellis was terrific. I mean, yeah. he played really well. So they've got depth at a lot of positions, especially that secondary. It's a really good defense. I just feel like Penn State fans have to be frustrated. And I hear this over and over. And this is the kind of the way I felt after the game. It's like Iowa might have won, but you're celebrating and you didn't beat Penn State's best team at all without Clifford. You know, get your celebration in now, because I just don't feel like Iowa's all that great a team. I don't. I mean, I don't.
Number two in the country has never looked so bad, Dave.
It's like South Florida in 2006 or whenever that was. Yeah. I'm like, come on, man. That's not the number two team in the country.
This is the Blue White Breakdown.
Welcome to Curaleaf, a medical marijuana dispensary. Whether you're a longtime patient or you're just getting acquainted with this incredible plant, Curaleaf of Pennsylvania is honored to guide you along your medical marijuana journey. Have questions? Visit us at Curaleaf.com or stop in to see us at any of our 12 locations. Let's talk medical marijuana and let our confidence become yours.
Let's just look real quick at the second half schedule, what you see, what you think. I know the elephant in the room is going to be Sean Clifford's availability. We just don't know, unfortunately, how long he's going to be out. But, you know, off the bye, they're going to host Illinois. They go to Ohio State. Then I believe they go to Maryland. Then they still have to play Michigan at home, Rutgers at home, and they close at Michigan State. Just based upon your gut, the final six games, what do you see for Penn State?
Well, the whole season is Columbus, as far as if they can win in Columbus somehow, if Clifford's in better shape than maybe we believe. And we don't know what we believe, because the problem is when you get an injury like that under there, when you've been exposed, there's a little PTSD going on there because you don't want to get hit there again.
Right.
So I don't. Even if he's able to come back, I don't know if he'll be as effective as he was, because he was at a peak. He was at a pinnacle, and I think they win this game, as I said, with him. Illinois has been tenderized. They just got chewed up. Yes. That was my counterculture third place pick in the West is not going to work out. They lost a couple of games they could have won early. And now basically they're just meat. So Taquan Roberson, I think, can win that game on his own. The question is, if Clifford is available, do you play him simply to get some work in, or do you go through it and just run read option with Taquan Roberson? Cause that'll be good enough. Maryland has also been tenderized by both Ohio State and Iowa, and they don't look like the same team at all. That is not as scary a game as it used to look like. The one that is Michigan. Michigan is playing really well, and they won a really impressive road game at Nebraska, which I also picked to win four straight here. And Nebraska, damn them. I mean, they had it right there, and it looked like they were going to.
They do, Dave. It's what they do in tight spots.
It is what they do. It is what they do. It looked like Adrian Martinez was going to drive him to the winning field goal, and everything would be good and well in Memorial Stadium. And, of course, he fumbled in a scrum that could have been whistled but wasn't by the Big Ten officials.
Shark face lives.
They are on a real roll here because they're running the ball, and they've got some wideouts who can really play. They've got two different kinds of running backs. They've got the big kid. And they've got the little guy, their little race car, who's really quick. And McNamara has never looked better as far as being in a groove with his receivers. I know it's annoying that J.J. McCarthy comes in on second and seven. And but I think they're doing the right thing, getting him work, because they might need him. He's really, really talented. So they look like the most complete team in the division right now, even maybe – considering Ohio State. If Michigan's ever going to get it done and actually win the East, this is the year. So there's a lot of obstacles. Then even if they get through all this, you've got Michigan State on the road at the very end, and Michigan State's playing. They've got a really good offense that is full of weaponry, maybe the three best skill position players on one team, even including Ohio State, and Peyton Thorne, Kenneth Walker, And actually, they've got a couple of different wideouts that you could put in there, but they just don't have the defense considering what Michigan and Ohio State. Yeah. Ohio State's defense, I don't trust them yet. Michigan might be the most balanced team in the league.
The way that college football is going right now, Dave, it's not just been this year; it's been the last couple of years. Other than outside of the freaks that are the Georgia defense, and they are freaks. I think that the whole team might get drafted. They're so good, but for the rest of the country, it's the team that can score the ball the most is usually the team that's going to be tough to beat. I think Ohio State. I have not seen enough of them, but with the talent level that they have, I think they can score better than anyone else in the Big Ten. And I think ultimately, I know their defense has some issues. I think they've tightened things up a little bit. That's going to be, I think, the storyline in the second half is, can anyone in the Big Ten score with Ohio State? Maybe I'm wrong, but that's a tough, with that Henderson kid now at running back, the quarterback's got, they have a great offensive line. The quarterback's got a lot of weapons. He's a talented kid too. I just think that is just, even if Sean Clifford's ready for that game, and as good as I just talked about Penn State's defense, I just think that, man, you just got to play a perfect game almost against that Penn.
You could have, if Clifford had gotten through this game and they win by two touchdowns, then at least you figure, well, Penn State's got enough weaponry that they can score on Ohio State, because Ohio State's back seven still has some issues. They're just so overwhelming on offense with Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave and CJ Stroud, their freshman quarterback, has looked terrific. And he's just picking guys out. And Travion Henderson, holy crap, is already the best back in the league. They've just got such weaponry that even Penn State's defense, but you would have given them a chance. Now with Clifford in question, I don't know, man.
It feels to me like for Penn State in the second half, best case 5-1. 4-2 is a possibility. I don't see them, whatever happens, if Clifford can return in a couple of weeks, if he can, I don't see them losing to Ohio State, Michigan, and Michigan State. I think the defense will do enough to win at least one of those games. If Clifford can return, I could certainly see 5-1 for sure. Then you're looking at 10-2. But, you know, we're just talking, we're taking shots in the dark here because we just don't know what Sean Clifford looks like. But I just think Ohio State, you knew that they were going to get a little bit better after what happened in the Oregon game. I think they're there, but I have not seen enough of them, especially
I'm not convinced about their defense because who did they play? They played Akron, Rutgers, and Maryland. Those are not high-powered offenses that are going to challenge that defense.
They're not going to face any high power offense, though.
Well, what I was saying was that Michigan State is. Michigan State's a really good offense, man.
Okay.
Yeah, and they're but they get them at home. I don't know. And Michigan State is in no way, shape, or form can stop them. That's the problem. Okay. Penn State, you could hope, could slow them down. And then Penn State was the team, I think, that could get them. And maybe Michigan at the end of the year. Maybe this is Michigan's year. Probably not, but Clifford's injury really puts everything in doubt to me.
All right, Dave Jones, I'm going to wrap up this Blue White Breakdown podcast with one thought. I want you to tell me if you agree with me or not. I think what we learned after watching Penn State and Iowa is that if I'm James Franklin, I'm lobbying the state of Pennsylvania to sell beer at Beaver Stadium in the big games, because as great as that crowd is, relatively sober, if you could get them to that Iowa level and there's 105,000 of them, I don't know that Penn State's ever going to lose. Am I right?
You just want beer in the press box. I think that's what you want.
That is the correct answer. I thought I Kobayashi Maru'd you and gave you a scenario that you were never going to get to. The right answer. And the right answer is I just want to be able to drink beer in the press box. You nailed it. That's it for this edition of the Blue White Breakdown. We're only going to do one this week. It's the bye week. I'm Bob Flanders. He's David Jones. You guys enjoy the rest of your bye week. We'll talk to you next week.
See you guys.
This has been the Blue White Breakdown, brought to you by Penn Live.